We met last, and I think it will be useful if we could rapidly go over the topic we discussed. The topic was the gnosis or the supramental world. We studied the precise place of this world of gnosis in the gradation of the evolutionary stars, and saw that it is the link world between our lower hemisphere, the physical, the vital, the mental world, ending with the summits, over mental summits, and the higher triple world, Sat, Chit, Ananda, existence, consciousness and bliss. It is this link world that makes the lower hemisphere a projection of the higher. It is that which works out the will and intention of the creative Satchidananda in the universe that is under manifestation. We also saw that it is a world where knowledge is spontaneous. One doesn't have to labor in the manner of the logical mind, because all knowledge is there self-contained. It is knowledge by identity, not by grasping. It is also the world which opens out on its summits to the vastitudes of delight and bliss. For nearer to us, the worlds of Ananda, the bliss, are the first to greet when we rise beyond the highest mental and over-mental levels. Thereafter come the worlds of consciousness, sheer awareness, which in turn lead to the infinite existence, which is a sheer existence. Now, the chapter for our discussion today deals with the conditions for reaching this world of gnosis, organized as it is on totally different principles. One has to equip oneself with the necessary psychological frame, state of consciousness that can contact and that can enter into the portals of the world of masses. In the mental world, we have seen that the dominant power is one of mental intelligence. It is not that's the only power operative in the mental world. As in every plane, there is one characteristic power which rules, which dominates, and all the other six of the total seven powers subserve it. But the world gets its name by the character of the dominant power that rules it. Mental intelligence is the characteristic power of the mental world. Nothing registers in the mental being there unless it is cognized, interpreted, and assimilated by the mental intelligence. Indeed, there is not the instrumentation of the physical senses as in our world, physical world here. But the mental world has its own subtle mental senses, which grasp the objects and report to the mental intelligence. But all told, it is a mental operation. The presiding power is mental intelligence. Man here on earth is also a mental being, but he is not the mental being who lives in the mental world proper. He is here involved in the physical matter, living physical matter. That is why his mental apparatus is not at its highest. It is always clogged, always dependent upon the physical instrumentation. He has to depend for data, at any rate in the beginning, on the physical senses that go and make an impact, contact on things and movements, report to the mind, the cognizing mind, the analyzing mind, which orders these reports of the physical senses and arrives at its own conclusions and stamps them as knowledge, whether what is so arrived at is real knowledge, half knowledge, or false knowledge is another matter. All these questions, however, do not obtain when once we go to the level of the Gnosis. There, knowledge does not have to be gathered. There is a vast principle and power of knowledge, which functions automatically, spontaneously. A Gnostic being has only to will what he wants to know. There is an immediate willing up of the knowledge, or a revelation of what is to be known. That is because the knowledge that rules as consciousness on this plane is all-pervading. It is instinct, and it contains the contents of everything which it chooses to know. In the traditional yoga of Patanjali, Raja Yoga, as it is called, there is a technical expression called Sanyama, concentration. If you concentrate enough with sufficient force on a particular object, that object yields its contents to you. There it is a siddhi, it is an accomplishment arrived at by yogic effort. Here, in the Gnostic world, it is an effortless unveiling of knowledge. But In order to arrive at that state of consciousness where knowledge is self-evident, there is a most important condition to be fulfilled. That is, one must have learned to dispossess oneself of the deforming load of ego. One has to discard the separative walls of ego. As long as one has the consciousness that one is separate, all the others are others. As long as one is shut up in one's own separative formation, it is impossible to get through the portals of the Gnostic world. Mother has been saying 100 times and more that unless we break up our limited formations, egoistic formations, and breathe a larger consciousness, learn to identify ourselves more and more with the universe, it is idle to expect that we can touch the supermind. It is impossible for the supermind to make a direct entry into a person who is still breathing the tainted air of egoism. To put it in other words, before you can become a superman, you have to become a universal man. There is no way of bypassing this requirement. Some may call it the cosmic man, the universal man, or the no man, in the sense of no egoistic man. But one has to identify himself, embrace the whole universe in his consciousness, cultivate a habit. First conceive of it mentally, imagine it, accustom your thinking to that conception, regulate your day-to-day life at every level in the light of this knowledge that I am one with all, my interests are their interests are mine. Or, to put it in the language Sri Aurobindo used elsewhere, unless my heart throbs with the beats of other hearts, this second step of spiritual transformation is not complete. As we have known and discussed before, the first step is the realization of the individual divine, what is called the psychicization. The second step is the universalization. It is only after these two capital steps, indispensable steps, are completed that there is the possibility of the third step of supramentalization leading to its inevitable consequence of total transformation. To come back to our theme, one has to have a real and concrete sense of unity, unity with the universe, totally free from the sense of separativity from others, before one can breathe the air of the Gnostic world. Knowledge is spontaneous. Knowledge has another feature. It is always accompanied by will, power. What happens in our terrestrial world is that when there is an idea, there is not the necessary power to effectuate it. Where there is power, it is blind. It does not have the necessary light, the conception, to lead it into effective action. Besides, there is the clash of one idea with another, one will with another. In the Gnostic world, these vitiations, deviations are absent. Knowledge and power, power that is will, conscious power, conscious will is power. Both are, as it were, two sides of the same coin. Where knowledge leads, power follows. Where power manifests, knowledge supports. So it is the fulfillment of the twin powers in creation of knowledge and light. The knowledge and power, light and power, knowledge and will. The one condition to realize this state is that one must have the consciousness of infinity, not limitation, but a boundless expansion. The infinity, again, is not to be conceived only as an infinite extension, as a borderless extension. It is that, of course, but it is also an inner infinity that has no end. There is an infinity around, there is an infinity within, there is an infinity above. All below, there is an infinite. So much so that the individual feels he is but a point. Not a negligible point, of course, but a point, a necessary point for concentration of individualized action. Even infinity needs to focus itself in a point for a particular action. The individual realizes that he is that point of centralization, a point of convenience for the action of the infinite. He is, and yet he is not as an individual. He is not in the sense we are familiar with here, but he is, because he continues to play his part as one ray of the sun. There is knowledge, there is power, there is an unmixed, unadulterated bliss. When the consciousness is freed from the deforming elements, mixture of egoism, desire, falsehood, it feels the throb of the underlying bliss. This bliss is always there, but in our conditions of ignorance and limitation, it is rendered in the incomplete terms of pleasure, joy, pain, indifference. These are all superficial renderings which it is possible to reset even in certain states of purified spiritual consciousness. One does not have to wait till one reaches the Gnostic levels, but there it is natural. The bliss that flows is irresistible. They are the seas of delight and ananda of which Sri Aurobindo speaks. The whole being, at every level, level of existence, level of dynamism, will, level of knowledge, level of experience of delight, it becomes a vehicle of the living of the Supreme. The individual no more feels that he is even an instrument, that he even reflects something. He feels he is just a center through which a mighty creative being knows, wills, delights, exists. This is the acme of experience that a mental man arriving and living in the Gnostic plane can experience. The conditions are, as we have seen, total elimination of ego, displacement of the reasoning and the logical mind by first the silent spiritual mind opening up to the action of the higher planes of illumination, inspiration, revelation and intuition. The elimination of desire and self-will. One starts in the very beginning indeed, surrendering these loads, vestiges from the animal past, but this surrender reaches its culmination as one qualifies for entry into the Gnostic world. Any questions? Theoretically, it should be possible to attain to the Gnostic world only by the opening up of the higher levels of the mental consciousness. By scaling those heights, fulfilling the conditions, it should be possible. But it is a long and arduous effort. When the psychic is awakened, it releases many forces which break up the walls of ignorance and falsehood and facilitates the purification of the mind and the emotions, links up the lower being with the higher at its own level, and whether the mind is developed or not, the psychic forms its own channel of communication, and by love, the action of surrender, which is so natural and spontaneous to it, it builds the bridge to the gnosis. The easiest way and the most effective way to reach the Gnostic world, the Gnostic consciousness, is to find the psychic key, open the psychic realm, heart, deepen the consciousness, go deep and deep within, allow the psychic to psychicize the whole being, so that the entire system aspires in one chorus for the harmonies of the Gnosis.
This higher knowledge is there. Is it useful to try and translate it into the mind, but to try and bring it into the mind by, for instance, trying to formulate?
The fact is, when one is stationed on levels above the mind, one realizes that all the knowledge that one has cannot be rendered in terms of the intellect. But it is possible to use the mental language, especially the symbolic aspect of it, to express the higher knowledge. But knowledge need not always be expressed in mental terms.
No, my question is it useful for the development of the mind to bring that into the mind? Or what does the mind do?
For an integral development, it is useful to develop all the parts in the mold of the Gnostic knowledge and consciousness. Mind, being the most developed part, has its first claim to be so developed. The love and the delight aspect of it floods the heart. The knowledge and the wisdom, it radiates in the mind. The immutable, the immortal existence suffuses itself in the physical. One does not have to make an effort. Once one is stationed there firmly. These actions go on simultaneously and spontaneously. It is of course understood that there is always the stress on the temperament and the nature of the individual. If one has been an intellectual, a mentally developed being, there will necessarily be a preponderance of the manifestation of knowledge in that individual. In others, it may be a dynamic overflow of love and delight. The way is not to build the mind in the mold of the Gnostic knowledge, but to lay open the mind for the higher knowledge to act upon it and fill itself in the mind.
This transformation of consciousness that we're all aspiring to achieve, this is happening all over the world, isn't it? A letter has just been received from a young Methodist addressed to Makamandir Ashram Oroville, which is very interesting. He says he's practiced yoga and read a little about Indian philosophy, also Sri Ramana Maharshi's teachings, and two books by Krishnamurti. He says, I was greatly impressed, particularly by Krishnamurti, because he speaks in nowadays language, and he doesn't make me believe in ideas, such as a personal God, in which I cannot really believe. I think that I'm changing, he says, all the time. I think that I'm changing all the time, but I haven't really changed yet. And even if it is better now, it is still bad. I want to find something true. Something really true. I really don't know what to do. They say that true, I guess it means truth, is everywhere, in each thing and in everyone. But I want to go to Oroville. So please answer if it is possible. If I get an invitation from you, I would earn enough money to go there, but without an invitation, I haven't any chance to go there. I think this is something that would be for you to answer.
Mm. He's from which country?
Hmm? Poland. Gdynia, Poland.
It is very understandable, because he has been reading three kinds of literature, isn't it? Ramana Maharshi's, Krishnamurti's and Sri Aurobindo's.
He doesn't say Sri Aurobindo, but he must have, because...
Otherwise, why he wouldn't write here? Now, each one approaches the reality from a different angle. Krishnamurti no doubt speaks the modern language, but his role is one of destruction. He breaks down all the traditional constructions, mental constructions that have grown down the ages, superstitions, mental ideas, all these which have give a certain comfort to the ignorant mind, that we are safe, this will protect us, this is right, this is knowledge and all that. His role appears to be in the larger occult economy of things to clear the passage, to break down all these impermanent barricades for the development of mind. And those who have taken only that much help from him have been fortunate. But like most preachers or teachers, he says that is the end of things. To demolish what has been built, to decondition the mind is enough. There is an automatic perception of the reality. That is, in brief, his approach. So what has happened? Lot of youngsters, not only in Europe, but in America and India, they took enthusiastically to this approach, but afterwards found themselves rudderless. Their props were knocked down, but the reality of which he spoke or he speaks as being self-evident once the deconditioning is done did not reveal itself. To him, in some way it is there, because he has arrived at the frontier of the silent mind. He feels the presence of something which is néant, they call it in French, something which you can't describe. But the others who follow his instructions, because they are not ready in their consciousness to perceive that reality, they are left hanging in the midair. So there is a sense of progress, but no sense of certainty. If he has practiced Maharshi's, Ramana Maharshi's teaching, which consists in asking yourself, who am I? That is a relentless process of self-introspection. If one sincerely does it, one gets released from the surface activity of the sense mind, but not the reasoning mind. There is again a sense of movement within, a sense of feeling of progress, of a certain peace which one gets as one withdraws from the frothy surface. But unless the grace of the Guru is there to push him further, it is extremely difficult to arrive at the self, the capital self, that is deep within. So in either case, he has trodden the path, arrived somewhere, but not gone far enough. This path, if he takes to it now, it will help him a good deal, because he already has had, got this preliminary training, self-training, silencing the mind, dispossessing the mind of all its notions, withdrawing from the surface activity and interiorizing the consciousness, looking towards the self within. These are all great advantages in any yoga, particularly in our yoga. So such persons should be encouraged to study more of Sri Aurobindo's works, especially his letters on yoga and the synthesis. It depends upon some who are used to visual experience would conceive of it or imagine it as a splendor, as a radiant light. Some who have it a feeling, they would think of it as a presence. At any rate, till one has the experience, one begins by mentally picturing or constructing mentally that experience. That creates a certain climate, a certain groove for the experience to flow. It creates a sort of a magnet. For those who are fortunate, at the very first step, if they are given some peep into that world, some kind of experience, they do not need to visualize, they do not need to imagine, they do not need to dream. For us, to whom what Sri Aurobindo says or Mother says has an authentic ring, what we read is enough. What he has written, that remembrance, that recollection is quite enough to establish the link. But for an outsider, it is only an information. For those of us who are open to Sri Aurobindo, who are linked with him in consciousness, it is a power. For the rest, it is a book of philosophy or yoga for outside people. They have to resort to all these mental gymnastics. That is why you see in all these books on yoga published in Europe or in America, points 1, 2, 3, 4, what you have to do step by step and all that, all those things are never done. When one starts doing yoga, there is not that one by one, step by step. Each thing leads automatically to the other. Count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, shut your eyes. All that, the whole, it is a fragmentation. It is a, what do you say, vulgarization of the thought. I get books, such books for review from various journals, and highly costly. People who have come to India, known something, live under certain great masters, there, on the plea that they have to deliver the goods to a Western mind, they mathematize it. That won't work. It is a natural process. The mind becomes prisoner of a system when you follow those textbooks.